News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings, right at 8.07 on your Monday morning. And good to have you along, good to have you listening, and thank you so much. We've got a special guest on the way in the right around 8.30.
Yeah, Dylan Waller, my friend with Waller K9 and Theodore. He's on Fowl River Road, and he's watched after my dogs a time or two. We'll have him in to talk about what he does and what services he provides, but also kind of an Ask the Expert segment. If you have any questions about training or raising dogs, maybe you're having issues, maybe you brought an older dog in or one out of the pound, and you got to kind of make it so that can coexist peacefully with you. He'll help you with that. He's really, really great with the animals. So Dylan will come in just after 8:30. If you have any questions for him, bring him on the text line, 251-343-0106.
I'd like to know if that's really true. Maybe it depends on the breed of dog or just the temperament of the dog, but in terms of teaching an old dog new tricks, what age would a dog age out of not being able to comply to training and lessons and things like that, where they're just like, no, I ain't doing it, man.
Yeah,
I don't know what that age would be, or if it even exists.
We have two at my house, and on two totally different stages of their lives right now. We've got my old boy Murphy, the Boston Terrier, who is 14. He'll be 15 in February, so he's 14, and he's got some struggles right now. Blind, has trouble hearing. Even before all that, I always said his nose didn't work right. If he was in a dark room with a steak, he wouldn't be able to find it. So now he's, he's my man. And then I have a blue tick coonhound who is all business and all fun, too. And he's three. So Dylan knows him well, Chase, my blue tick. Maybe I'll get him to talk about him some. But, yeah, any questions, we'll get him to Dylan, 251-343-0106. In the meantime, our three big things this morning. We had a couple local stories. We could maybe get into that some, but of course the fighting rages on in the Middle East, but in a way, I mean, now it's all about this ceasefire, and will it stand past Wednesday? Will they be able to come to some longer-term deal? Firing on that ship yesterday was something else. Blew a hole in the engine room, and I think that was after they said, I want to say I read that for hours, 6 hours, they stood off with that tanker and were telling them,
don't go.
Don't go.
Don't do it.
Finally, after 6 hours, a well-placed volley into the engine room, they either decided to stop or were forced to after that. And Iran has promised that they will retaliate. I saw yesterday they claimed they were retaliating by sending drones at some of our naval assets. I didn't hear of any damage on the American side of things there, but they have said, and let me get you the exact words from them here, Tehran will, quote, take the necessary action against U.S. forces, according to state news. After the capture of that Iranian flagged ship yesterday, the IRGC had been, quote, prepared to respond decisively to the invading American forces following their, quote, blatant aggression, according to the IRGC-linked Tasnim news agency. However, they said Iranian forces faced certain limitations over the presence of family members of the ship's crew on board. Given the current circumstances, once the safety of the families and crew of the vessel targeted by the U.S. is ensured, the powerful armed forces of the Islamic Republic of Iran will take the necessary action against the terrorist U.S. military.
Yeah, it sounds like negotiations are going really well.
Doesn't it?
I mean, it's just, I think on Friday, so they reopened the Strait of Hormuz Thursday or Friday, something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to be like, well, it's like exhale, and then you can't exhale for long because there's some sort of a caveat, or there's some sort of a misunderstanding. The stakes are so high, how could there possibly be misunderstandings in negotiations? For instance, first of all, we have the ceasefire, and we have the United States saying one thing, like, look, now, like, Iran got all up in arms because Israel continued to attack Lebanon, right? Mm-hmm. And like, and they're saying that wasn't part of the deal. They were supposed to cease fire too.
Right.
And then we're saying, no, that wasn't part of the deal in that way. You're wrong. So how do you get a detail that huge wrong? It's just BS. And then suddenly they open up like we're supposed to feel good again late last week. Okay, now they're going to open up the Strait of Hormuz. And it's by Saturday morning. Well, your head whips around again and like, no,
yeah.
They're not putting up with that either. Iran is accusing the U.S. like, you didn't say you're going to keep doing the block. It's like fifth graders in the back of a car.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, no, you knew we were going to do the blockade. So it's just negotiating with this regime it just doesn't work.
And from what I've gathered, it's exactly what you and I were saying and reading and talking about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I mean, it's been ongoing. You have different factions in Iran, just like you have different factions in Israel, too. You have those that are wanting to go to war. Everything else be damned.
Yep.
They're ready to end this with Iran and these Muslim terrorists. And then you have a lot of folks in Israel who aren't as ready for war, and they're kind of ready to wind things down. Well, in Iran, you have the ones considered moderates, I guess, that are ready to work out a deal and move on with what they have. Or maybe even some of them still want to see military action but believe they need to regroup, reset, and use some time to rebuild. But you have these military hardliners with the IRGC who are willing to fight until the very end, and they feel the very end is right now. So they get into these negotiations and just change things or start firing off shots. So they say that the U.S. wasn't supposed to keep the blockade up during the opening of the strait. Then they fired on, two Indian tankers, I believe.
Did they do that before we blew a hole in the...
Yeah, that was
the first salvo. That was Saturday morning.
Right, okay. Yeah. And then blew the hole in the ship, I believe, overnight Saturday or earlier yesterday. Now, that ship that was seized, according to the Wall Street Journal, belongs to a subsidiary of a sanctioned Iranian state-owned group. It was sailing to Iran after visiting China late last month. A lot of folks are wondering exactly what was on that ship.
Well, I think we're about to find out are finding out.
The company, Iran Shipping Lines, has been accused of transporting items with potential military use to Iran. So they're wondering if there were some military equipment on there. I guess our guys know by now because they've boarded the ship.
It's like a six-hour conversation we were having with that ship, and then finally we let them have it.
Blew a hole in it, yeah. The destroyer warned the crew to evacuate the ship's engine room and then fired several rounds into that area, disabling its propulsion. That's according to CENTCOM. Marines from the amphibious assault ship, the USS Tripoli, then boarded the ship by helicopter. The U.S. has not yet revealed if U.S. forces found anything of interest on board, and it's not completely clear why the 965-foot ship tried to slip through the blockade or what it was carrying.
And you got to also consider that there are portions of the regime in Iran where it's just a suicide. It's a suicide mission.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't negotiate if your ultimate goal is, we don't really care, and we'll die for whatever.
Yeah.
That's where does a negotiation come in there?
Yeah.
Unless it's half, but, you know,
and that
doesn't matter.
For many in Iran, I think that's what it was, and I was reading some were using this ceasefire to dig up a bunch of the missiles and missile launchers that they had buried so that they could have more to fire off once the ceasefire comes to an end.
Yeah, and so that's Wednesday. And it's tenuous as it is. Will they roll it out further? Not sure. There's going to be talks, I believe, in Pakistan tomorrow with Vance and company there. Same people that had that long meeting with them back a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
So former deputy commander of U.S. Central Command is Admiral Robert Harward. And he was a guest on Newsmax over the weekend. He talked about the options that the U.S. has. So, again, it's maddening. Negotiating with this regime doesn't seem to really bear any fruit. It's just, we just look silly, it seems. Here's what he's got to say about what's next.
Well, there's a whole range of options. Look, we showed we could go in, take a piece of ground, hold it to recover that pilot. We could do the same thing anywhere else in Iran to accomplish a few things. further illustrate to the regime that we can do that, that we have the power to do whatever we want to do in Iran, and to also illustrate to the people of Iran the commitment the president made to them. Help is on the way, and that's another form. So coming into the country, and not for occupation, but for maybe a brief period of time as a raid, further illustrates how impotent the regime is and the options and what we can do. It could be expanded to taking Karg Island, as we've all talked about, maybe Abadan, their refineries, maybe other cities or locations, just to illustrate and add to our negotiating positions, because all of the options we have to continue to degrade their capabilities and illustrate to them the inevitable outcome of this this whole conflict.
Yeah, so if they don't really care about all that, we're demonstrating we've got the power to do things like we did with recovering the pilot, right? So if we can do that, we can do all kinds of things. Karg Island is definitely on the table at this point. But if they, if there's a portion or a faction that really doesn't care, this is a suicide type belief in their Islamic beliefs, you know, faithful exercise for them. Like, we're not even worried about worldly things. We're going to go down, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, and Trump reiterated the alternative again yesterday, and I think again this morning, that if they don't come to a deal, they're just going to blow Iran up, all of their
bridges and infrastructure,
all their oil fields, and Karg Island still plays a big role in this. Obviously, I saw that they have the plans out and ready for Trump. He's worried about the loss of American military and losing service members because I think somebody said they would be sitting ducks. I forget which intelligence it was put that out there, but that American military members would be sitting ducks on Karg Island was the term that I read. So putting boots on the ground, obviously things get a lot more dangerous. I also saw that during the rescue of that downed American pilot, they weren't keeping Trump updated minute by minute. It was more of a every so often they'd tell him how things were going because they were worried his impatience would kind of maybe work against the military's efforts to rescue that downed pilot.
Really?
And that if things weren't happening quickly enough, he would escalate or maybe they would. So that was an interesting thing to see over the weekend, too. And you still have those mines out there in the strait. So even when they opened it up.
Mines shifted. They don't know where all the mines are because now, I mean, you know, you put the mines one spot or in areas, but the map no longer means as much as it did initially because many of them have shifted underwater.
Yeah, I guess not. So the U.S. military has been using sea drones, or at least they were when that strait was supposed to be reopened again. They were using sea drones to try to find the mines that may be there. And, of course, Iran closed the strait again after firing on those two vessels. So I'm not sure that the sea drones are out there now, but this includes uncrewed surface vessels and submarines. And that is basically the nexus of the U.S. Navy's countermine capabilities now, as all the traditional minesweepers have been retired. I remember Jeff Poor talking about how that used to be the UK's thing.
Yep.
It was minesweeping.
Yep.
They don't seem to have that ability or want to help as much anymore. But now we have these drones, these sea drones that use sonar to scan for mines without putting sailors at risk, but they have to be able to operate. And I don't know if they can right now.
So the UK, if they no longer, either they no longer have the capability of dealing with it, or they're just keeping their players in the dugout. They're like, yeah, we can do that, but we're not going to do that.
Mm.
Michael on the text line says, I don't think it's as much as a misunderstanding. It's more both Trump and Iran moving the goalposts, and I think there's probably something to that, too. I don't know.
He also asks, is it a possibility that Iran is just trying to outlast Trump because they know at the end of this month he'll have to get approval or stop the attacks? There's that.
Could be, yeah.
And there's the midterms coming up, too, that are playing a pretty big role in this timeline.
Iran is aware of all of that.
251-343-0106. I'm seeing a lot of texts on this and more, and we'll get to those on the way right here on Mobile Mornings.
Turn up your voice on the text line. 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 1065, 825 with Dylan Waller. Waller Kenai is going to be our guest at 8:35, so get those dog questions ready to go. He runs quite a tight ship out there, huh?
Yeah, I love being out there. Not as much as my dog does, but, I mean, I like it.
If you liked it as much as your dog, then you would be suffering from some sort of mental problems.
Yeah.
Because it's designed for dogs.
Yeah, they've got plenty of room to run and have a good time. Yeah, Dylan will be in with us just after 8:30. We'll talk with him about what he has going on. Text line 251-343-0106. Chad says, I thought WKRG's Shamani Baker said Shrek Day instead of Shred Day. I was so confused. We need a Shrek Day, I think.
What would happen on Shrek Day?
I think you just paint yourself green and act like an ogre, I guess. Another texter, needs some CIA covert infiltrated action into Iran. Take out the leaders, take out the propaganda news outlets, arm the Persians to kick out the extremists. And said India needs to send the Gurkhas in. Oh, with those swords. Systematic elimination of the Iranian Republic Guard and extremists, drones, missiles, Persian uprising, and last resort, American boots on the ground. Yeah, I don't know about that uprising. We're still waiting on it, aren't we?
I heard there's more. There was more systematic deaths done by the faction that is almost like the National Guard, the people among the people, the business owners and such that they arm to take out people who are protesting or making things a little uncomfortable on the streets. I think some of that happened late last week all over again. I don't know how many were killed, but there were some.
It continues, Squirrel Vereen, when we were talking about the story this morning, and he part of that story said warnings of war crimes. He says, this is where reading the news is a problem. It isn't a war crime. No, that's what the anti-Trump action in Iran people are saying. Basically, they're trying to say anything is a war crime because they don't approve of this war.
Trump has pretty much resisted doing what other presidents have done. As far as taking out infrastructure and bridges and things like that, there's been cases in all recent history where presidents are saying, yeah, I've had it to here, and we're going to do that. And he has resisted doing that for the citizens of Iran to this point.
They did knock out that one big bridge a couple weeks ago. But, yeah, other than that.
So it's a mass wipeout of infrastructure, bridges, and power plants.
And Squirrel Vereen says this, too. He says, make no mistake in thinking surveillance is being done on Iran's activities during the ceasefire. It just amazes me how much criticism this gets. No one expected an op, a war on Iran, would go this well and so quickly. Over and over, people would say that a war with Iran would be catastrophic, worse than this, worse than that. Now people are nitpicking about gas prices, the war being days long, or one missile being fired instead of hundreds. Yeah, and I was saying that a lot through the early stages of the war. You have the Tucker Carlsons, the Alex Jones, so many people, even beyond them, who were there, the more well-known ones, that said a war with Iran would be absolutely and immediately catastrophic, not just in the Middle East, but that there would be Iranian uprisings in the United States and terrorist attacks all over the place. You're exactly right on that, Squirrel Vereen. It hasn't gone the way that so many predicted
it would.
Not yet. Gardner says, Muslim leaders cannot be scared by the mutual annihilation threat of nuclear destruction or mass casualties. They don't fear death because they believe when they die, they will be rewarded.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Killer bees.
How do you negotiate with that? They're like, I don't care.
bring it.
That's bring it.
Let's see here. Find some more text here. Oh, we had that. So the million bees that came out of the truck that overturned in Knoxville on Friday, we were talking about last hour. C.B. Carl says, all you have to do is locate the queens. The rest of the colonies will go with her. I really used to enjoy capturing swarms. It's the only work that I've ever done that no one will bother you. No one's going to interrupt you while you gather a swarm of bees.
Right. They're like, have at it. Do your best. Be at your best.
Don says the same thing. You have to capture the queen. The rest will follow her. Sheila, Auburn's women's tennis won the SEC championship against LSU. It's their first in school history. Congratulations to Auburn there.
Nice.
251-343-0106. That's the number. Dylan Waller with Waller K9 set to join us. If you have any questions for him, let us know there. And more Mobile Mornings on the way.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
8:35, FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings on a Monday. And right now we head to McConnell Automotive where we talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, we're doing just fine. And I know McConnell Automotive, you got a lot of vehicles. You have some great SUVs. You have some great cars as well. But a lot of folks are coming in for the trucks, especially this time of the year. They need something to haul the boats or maybe to get out, haul the camper for some summer camping. And you've got those big old trucks ready and waiting for them.
That's right. Haul that camper up to Talladega this weekend.
Yeah.
The weather gets okay. But, yeah, you're right. We've got a great selection of half-ton, three-quarter-ton, and one-ton brand-new trucks over there. Don't forget it comes with that lifetime warranty. Also, don't forget on the half-tons, you've got 0%. Can't beat that. And we also have a great selection of used cars. You can check everything out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. You don't see anything you like, give us a call, 251-476-4141. We got buyers everywhere. We can buy what you want. No big deal.
Yeah, that inventory is always changing because you have new and pre-owns coming in all the time. But also, if someone's looking for something specific that you might not currently have on the lot, you can go out and find it.
That's right. I mean, like I said, we can buy just about anything, and we do buy anything you want. So, like I said, just give us a call, 251-476-4141.
All right. We appreciate it, Louie.
Hey, thank y'all.
That's Louie Arata. Go see him. He's at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and they also have a great website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Had a few local stories this morning, including two out of three big things. Pretty interesting. And I also think this Mardi Gras service shattering Amtrak expectations is a story worth talking about, too, and also getting opinions on the text line, if, in fact, you have taken the train to New Orleans and back and all that. And I think it's also something that we're going to see some we'll see some numbers reflected by downtown businesses that will say that this thing is working. We're getting people from New Orleans who are hopping off and spending a few hours in downtown Mobile.
Mm-hmm.
That was almost, the idea of that was nearly mocked by people against the train line when it started. And I mentioned to you earlier,
hey, I can't hate. I think I was part of that. I wasn't as sure that it would fail as others, but I had my...
I did too.
I was wondering.
Yeah, I wasn't a complete hater, but anything that was forced on you by the federal government, that's what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
So you're thinking, okay, it's bound to not do well, but the numbers say otherwise. They're soon going to welcome its 100,000th passenger on the Mardi Gras service, surpassing initial expectations when the Gulf Coast Light Rail service first launched. So they expected 75,000 people for the first year. That's 100,000 in the first 8 months. That's pretty strong. And what I asked earlier was, is this a honeymoon period that is stronger than we would have guessed? Or is this actually an idea of the trend to come, that things will just ramp up from here? And I think also one thing that I haven't, that I maybe underestimated, Dalton, was people enjoying the experience. The experience of the ride over there.
Yeah.
That it's more than just, it is in fact a Mardi Gras themed train line. I guess that has something to do with it. And it's not the same old Amtrak where government workers stare you down like, I don't care about your comfort. I don't care about how the ride's going for you. Maybe it's different.
And some people are more forthcoming about why they're on the train than others. And it's simply, for a lot of folks, hey, you can drink. You know, you could drink alcohol on the way there.
Yeah.
You could drink at the Saints game, ride back, and not be a danger to
anybody,
others on the road.
Yeah.
And kind of chill out along the way. What was interesting to me, too, I mean, beyond the insane numbers that they've put up and the dollar amounts with, what was it, $2.4 million in ticket revenue, plus another $326,000 in food and beverage sales on board.
Yeah.
That's before they get off the train and spend in Mobile or Biloxi or New Orleans, wherever they get off the train. That's a lot of money. But so Fox 10, they have their, sister station in New Orleans,
yep,
WVUE, who
yes,
posted this story. And something caught my eye on that line. The regional tourism industry is hoping to grow the line with stops in Baton Rouge and Pensacola, and possibly running north to Jackson, Mississippi. Now, taking it further westbound seems fine, but do you remember when they made this deal? I thought they said, at least in Alabama, they were not okay with it running eastbound and towards Pensacola. I think part of the deal they worked out with the freight lines is for a set amount of time, if I remember correctly, they're not going to be able to expand the passenger line eastward, because there was talk about having that line go over and eventually get you to Orlando.
Yep.
Or other places in Florida.
Sure.
But I remember that being a big part of that debate and conversation, that they weren't going to allow that passenger line to go eastbound. Now, westbound, I don't know, past New Orleans, what the deal is over there, whether they can continue the line there or not. But this has been so successful that maybe some minds are changing on that.
Maybe so. And so,
listen, Orlando, that might be one that I actually take the trip on. We're still planning on maybe doing it, the ride to New Orleans and spend some time over there and come back. We don't have anything planned immediately. My family doesn't. But if they can get us down to Orlando, I'm sure we could make a trip happen around that.
Well, Orlando's about an 8-hour drive for families from Mobile, you know, in normal traffic. And what is normal traffic in Mobile? That's a good question. So, you know, I'd like to know how long it would take with the duration of a Mobile. Probably stop in Pensacola, maybe stop other places too. But anyway, yeah. So a Mobile to Orlando, what that would look like. Also, just in terms of expanding to Pensacola, need your help again on the text line because I don't know. Obviously, with Mobile Bay, you'd have to take the tracks north to the area where that terrible accident happened years ago, up around north of Chickasaw, right? So the train track, I guess, you know, if you're trying to go east, you'd have to go north first,
right,
to get around the bay. So exactly what would the time be on the trip from Mobile to Pensacola? How much more would that be? I don't know. Maybe 2 hours, my guess?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I do remember that being a big part of the debate, though, and I think that it was the freight lines who didn't want to see it moving eastbound out of Mobile. So I don't know there. But what can't be disputed, they didn't expect this many people to be riding this soon. They're not even at a year to this point. Paul asks, is the train breaking even? If not, it is not a success. I believe it's at least breaking even right now. I mean, if they've pulled in $2.6 million in ticket revenue, just what, 8-9 months in?
Yeah.
And then nearly $500,000 in food and beverage sales on board. I'm guessing at this point they are breaking even. I don't know for a fact. But again, this is a long-term thing, too. Are they going to be able to keep up these ridership numbers in April of 2027 or April of 2028?
And I think the Saints thing on Sundays really helped the numbers. Because
remember, they added a car.
They added a car, yeah. Right? How about if the Saints actually
are winning?
Put a winner on the field?
Yeah.
And maybe with Tyler Shuck, is that his name, the quarterback? Mm-hmm. He looked pretty good as a rookie. So if the Saints like actually get off to a hot start, do they add another car? I mean, is that the way it works? I don't know, but that could play a role in all this. The success of the New Orleans Saints could solidify the whole ride again, maybe adding additional cars. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, Paul says, pretty sure it's not breaking even. I'll dig in. I'll try to get some hard numbers on that, and we'll see. If you have hard numbers, Paul, it sounds like you've got some good information on that. Let me know. Michael says, I'm still mocking the impact downtown. There's not been anything provided to show it's made a real impact. Y'all just mentioned anecdotal one-offs. I mean, what are you seeing downtown, Michael, that to you proves that there isn't extra business going on thanks to Amtrak? Because, I mean, Dan, you've said you've talked to bartenders and waiters and waitresses down there. They're seeing more people.
There's anybody who's an expert in talking to bartenders. So I know their lingo, but it's like, they're two or three places downtown.
Well,
right,
you know,
around
some business owners down there.
I do.
You talk to folks.
Yeah, and so it seems like they haven't given me any numbers, but they're saying, we get it. And it is more, you know, anecdote. I get it, Michael, for sure. But I think that you could grow on that. But they're already getting dollars from people that they never saw before, that were never here before. And I think to any business downtown or wherever, that's a good sign. They'll take it.
How about this? Good Samaritan of the day. This is from Fish Sniper, who this morning calling himself Rick the Goose Samaritan. He said, Dad, Mom, and 5 Goslings cross Airport Boulevard at Providence with a little help. Did you get out on airport to help the geese cross the road?
Wow.
That is, sounds a little dangerous, but Hey, man, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah,
Gardner.
This is the time they're on the move. The geese are on the move with their little babies.
Gardner, let's see, a couple texts here. Says, a much simpler way to say it. The only reason they're saying all this stuff about Trump and his supporters is because of liberal media, rhinos, socialists, Democrats, anarchists, and anti-American foreign leaders making ridiculous accusations. They want to keep power, and the only way they could do it is by destroying a strong, moral, conservative America that rewards hard work and doesn't play favorites by race or class. They lie, cheat, steal, import votes, hate America, and will do anything to stay in power. Don't fool yourself into thinking they're being rational.
I think the best example of that over the weekend was Chris Murphy, the senator from Democrat from Connecticut.
Yeah.
Talking in Spain, which has pretty much become socialist. And speaking, saying we need to round up all of the European nations that think this way to directly oppose Donald Trump. He's on foreign soil talking about the president of the United States and for everybody to unite to oppose him in the middle of a war action. Now, he's saying it's illegal, whatever. He's just one of those voices that's going to be, he gets the camera on him,
yeah.
And he's going to say what he's going to say. And one of the last guys that was noted for that is Eric Swalwell. So yeah. Careful what you wish for. Make sure your cupboard's clean there, Murphy.
You know, by the way, so many people looked at this last election with Trump winning as it's either now or never, that if the Democrats took office again,
yep.
That America would be changed in ways that it would never come back to. And so many thought that Trump would change that. And through the, you know, mandate of the American people, get these election voting laws back into line and a lot of the other things that the Democrats have been pushing, like the illegal immigration, wanting to expand statehood, thought that Trump would really take that out of the mix here in his second term. I'm not sure he's done enough, and certainly Congress hasn't done enough to make that a reality. Did you see what James Carville said last week?
Yeah.
The Democratic strategist. Now,
he pops off every now and then. They put it on Fox.
Yeah. But I don't know how much weight he still holds in Democrat circles. I know he still has the podcast. He's still running his mouth. He's still on media all the time. But Thursday, and I haven't seen much conversation about this at all, Carville on the Politics War Room podcast took questions from listeners. One asked whether Democrats should, quote, flood the zone with a corrective implementation policy using their majority to simultaneously enact a myriad of structural changes to save our democracy and preserve our rights. This is if they win the midterms coming up,
yep.
And then if they return to power in 2029,
yeah.
With that 28 election. So you had Carville, who was much more aggressive than his co-host. He said, if the Democrats win the presidency and both houses of Congress, I think on day one, they should make Puerto Rico and D.C. a state, and they should expand the Supreme Court to 13. He said, F it, eat our dust. Now, that statehood thing has been a long, long wish of Democrats to add potentially, you know, four more Senate seats, however many, four more Senate seats, which would, in those two spots, be all Democrat, most likely, and then expanding the Supreme Court, which has been discussed for some time.
Yeah.
Carville said they've done everything they could. They held up the 2000 election. They stole it. They've stolen. He's talking about Republicans at this point.
Yeah.
They've stolen Supreme Court seats. They've gerrymandered everything that you can. I don't know if he's seen the lines in New York and California and some of these other places. Yeah,
One-sided arguments.
But his whole thing is he says they should do this when they regain power. But it shouldn't be a central plank of the campaign because he knows that Americans don't want that. He said, don't run on it. Don't talk about
it. Just do it.
Just do it.
Yeah. And also, when the midterms come and go, it's going to be pretty interesting to see what those results are. And to this point, you would say that Republicans will get harmed during the midterms. People have been talking about that way before this war even started.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the pretty unpopular war. It could be one of those wars/conflicts. It's once it's over, it's going to be hard to deny that it was worth it, right? If it could work out that way,
yeah. If it works out well,
if it works out well, right. But two things that could happen. Once the midterms are over, one of them would be that Trump just becomes completely doesn't give a rat, and he tries to take care of some of the issues you were talking about, if this war is behind him, and just becomes kind of a nuclear Trump those last 2 years, because not running for re-election, he will definitely take on and try to take down the things that he sees being most important from that point on.
But it'll be so much more difficult. I mean, it's already been difficult, and we have a Republican House and a Republican Senate and a Republican in the White House. Mm-hmm. They just haven't gotten enough done to this point. And, you know, if the Democrats do win, especially the White House, how long until we see the border open back up? That stat we had this morning from the Pew Research Center absolutely amazed me. I had no idea that
one out of 10
birthright citizenship debate here, which the Supreme Court's looking at for 2023, 1 out of 10 U.S. births came from illegal immigrant mothers. 10% of U.S. births. There were 320,000 anchor babies basically born in 2023. That's out of 3.6 million babies born in total in the U.S. for that year.
1 out of 10.
1 out of 10. Now, the last time the number was that high was 2010, but for 2021, 22, and 23, those numbers were rising big time during Biden's term there. Did you know the number was that high? 10% of all babies born in 2023 came from mothers who were illegal immigrants.
Maybe somebody out there knew that or suspected that of our listeners because they pay close attention. But consider this. The report comes out, and news outlets are assuming we didn't know that because it's a big report. That's just one of the numbers from it, mm-hmm. and it becomes the headline. So we didn't know.
Yeah.
It's 8:51. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. Good to have you along.
News, weather, traffic, and sports. You're listening to Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, 8:55. Very disturbing breaking news this morning out of Wilmer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Fox 10's Mike Brantley reporting the Mobile County Sheriff's Office reports 3 people are dead this morning in a triple homicide in Wilmer. This is on Obel Moody Road. Looks like it's just off of Jack Williams Road there in Wilmer. And report, MCSO said the victims are a 46-year-old woman, a 17-year-old girl, and a 12-year-old boy.
Gee whiz.
All 3 lived at the residence where the bodies were found, and more information expected to be released later this morning. It sounds like an absolutely awful story to report on.
It is. It's
coming out of Wilmer.
Quiet area out there. We had a homicide last week. The sheriff, I think no arrests have been made. Actually happened last Tuesday, but some of the facts kind of dribbled out as the week went on, and they confirmed a 54-year-old man died in a shooting on Finley Court East in Wilmer last week. Sheriff Bird said it stemmed from a dispute between 2 brothers, and he also, this is back on Tuesday, Bird said he believes it was a case of self-defense. Hmm. No one has been arrested. No one is in custody, and the dead man was confirmed as Thomas Leroy Scroggins, so a very rare murder mm-hmm. in Wilmer last week, and now suddenly a triple homicide in that same small community.
With 2 juveniles, a 17-year-old girl and a 12-year-old boy. Absolutely tragic. I'm sure we'll have more on that, and our news updates throughout the day from WKRG will keep us updated there as well. Coming up, Jeff Porchow. He has State Representative Shane Stringer joining him in hour number 1. In hour 2, he'll have a conversation with Blount County DA Pam Casey. And in hour number 3, former State Senator Dick Brubaker set to join Jeff Poor. Coming up on Midday Mobile, Mr. Mobile will be sitting in for Sean Sullivan. As Sean, he'll be back on with us tomorrow. But John Young will be on today from noon to 2. So if you have any questions for Mr. Mobile, let us know. My buddy Dylan Waller, we'll get him in. He had something come up this morning, and we were unable to make that interview happen today, but he's probably looking after the dogs or something out there. So we'll get him back on the air with us for that Ask the Expert segment, hopefully tomorrow, but certainly at some point this week. We have eyewitness disputes or word of mouth disputes about how many riders Amtrak is bringing to downtown Mobile to spend money at our businesses and restaurants. So Michael says he too has talked with some friends. Let's see here. if I can find it. He says, business owners that are friends of mine, one owns a music venue, another couple of restaurant bar owners, they say they haven't noticed anything. You've heard some different conversation with folks downtown, Dan. Sam says, I was downtown yesterday. It seemed like a lot of people who didn't look like they were from around here. We assumed they were from the train. And another texter says, we went to New Orleans a few weeks ago, and it was a great experience on Amtrak.
That's the thing is, I don't know that we expected it to be a great experience because Amtrak does not necessarily have that reputation.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. But folks I've heard that have been on it said it was a great time. And Jason, we almost made it. I don't think we would have mentioned it if you didn't text it in. He said, thank y'all for getting through the show without acknowledging this 420 day garbage. I guess it is 420, isn't it?
And now we mentioned it.
Thanks, Jason. That was all you.
8:59. See you tomorrow.